And we are joined again on The Green by contributor Larry Nagengast. This week, he takes a look at the Reading Consortium's initial recommendations to Governor John Carney, what they are and where they may go from here. Larry, we appreciate you taking some time to join us again on The Green this week.
I'm glad to be here and happy new year.
So before we look at the recommendations themselves, can you tell us about the group's co-chairs, State Senator Tizzy Lockman and former Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor Matt Dehn, and what they had to say in the report's introduction? They did not pull any punches there, did they?
Yes, indeed. There was no mincing of words in this report. In fact, after I printed out the document and started reading it, I highlighted a half dozen powerful phrases on the first page alone. I'm sure we'll get into some of those details later in this conversation, but a couple of points do stand out. First of all, Matt Dehn and Tizzy Lockman point out that the state's return to neighborhood schools in northern Newcastle County 20 years ago created a system of racially identifiable high-poverty schools that was far worse than what the critics had predicted in 2001. Not for the attempts to support children in these high-poverty schools over the past two decades, they state bluntly, these efforts have failed. Time after time, they point out, the state has come up with partial solutions, seen them fail, and replaced them with yet another partial solution, and that in turn would fail. The result of this cycle of failure is that for an entire generation, significant numbers of students, not only in Wilmington, but also in other high-poverty areas of the state, have been shuffled through 13 years of school without getting the education that they need to become productive members of our society.
Having said that, what are some of the key things that they are recommending to avoid being the latest incomplete effort at addressing these issues? And beyond that, what's the price tag for making these things happen?
Well, let's do the price tag first. Add it all up, and we're in the neighborhood of $16 million additional for the fiscal 22 state budget. And if they go whole hog on this, it could be up closer to $30 million. However, it's important to understand that the consortium isn't making any radical recommendations. They consist primarily of expanding existing programs or accelerating the implementation of projects that were scheduled to start a couple of years from now. For example, for children under 5 years old, the state has a program that surveys children for their kindergarten readiness, but it doesn't have the money to reach out and survey all of these children. It has several home visitation programs that target families that are living in poverty, but it doesn't reach all of them. And the state has talked about free pre-kindergarten programs for 3- and 4-year-olds for years, but it hasn't implemented them yet. So now there's also been plenty of talk in the last 5 years about developing a system to improve the recruitment, retention, and training of teachers in high-poverty schools, but that hasn't happened yet either. There have been numerous initiatives around what is called outside school time programming. These are projects that run before and after school or during the summer, as well as wraparound services, things like school health centers, assistance to families, and so on. If you go back 10 years to the federal Race to the Top grant, some of that money went to programs like these, and there were a few successes, but most of these programs died when the money ran out. Taken together, I can say that there's very little here that hasn't been talked about before. But right now, the consortium is delivering this message about getting these programs going with a brand new sense of urgency.
As your piece points out, these recommendations aren't the only thing for Governor Carney to consider as he crafts his budget proposal for the upcoming fiscal year. He has also made commitments in the state education funding lawsuit settlement that was reached in the fall. Is there anything that could be considered kind of overlapping between those two things, or are these recommendations basically somewhat in competition with those settlement commitments for state funding?
Well, no, as I said, some of the consortium's recommendations are accelerations of programs that are in the works, items that pretty much resemble things that are committed to in that settlement. But that are a couple of years down the road. For example, when the governor agreed to the settlement in the finance lawsuit, one of the promises was to add at least $6 million in spending to early childhood education starting in fiscal year 2024. The consortium is recommending spending about $8 million more a year on these programs, but they want to start it this year, not 2 years from now. Similarly, the consortium's recommendations on professional development for staff in high-need schools at a cost of $1.2 million this year would amount to a one-year early start on a project that would start next year, a year later, under the terms of the lawsuit settlement. So we're talking here about an acceleration in many cases of things that the governor has or pledged to do starting a couple of years down the road.
Governor Carney has often turned to one-time or short-term allocations to address issues, including education, in an effort to remain fiscally responsible. How readily can that approach be used with these recommendations, or are these things that are going to really need new ongoing funding to work long-term?
Well, let's work with that $16 million figure that I gave you, and realize that that $16 million, it could turn out into something in excess of $20 million if they develop more than the minimum number of wraparound services that the consortium is recommending. Anyhow, the $16 million is a rough recommendation, a rough estimate of what these recommendations would cost next year. And that's less than 2% of the state's annual spending on education and a very small fraction of a state budget that's likely to be in the neighborhood of $5 billion for the next fiscal year. So, you know, it's reasonable to think that the governor could build $16 million or so into the budget as a one-time appropriation. You know, also, with regard to that school finance suit settlement, the only increased spending for the coming fiscal year is an additional $10 million in opportunity funding for students in high-need school. The other spending that's being pledged in the settlement won't kick in for 2 years from down the road, and some of it is actually phased in over a longer period of time. So, you know, in that context, I think adding $16 billion to the budget is something that would be doable. What we don't know, however, is how well the optimistic revenue estimates that the Delaware Economic and Financial Advisory Council, DFAC, provided last month will hold up in the spring when the state budget is actually being finalized.
So how much does the changing face of the General Assembly play here? Are these recommendations likely to find more supportive voices, and could that make a difference in what happens going forward from here?
But, you know, for now, I'm going to say yes. You know, and we've talked about this before in the context of the settlement for the school finance suit. You know, the new members of the legislature are generally younger and generally more progressive than the individuals that they replaced. In addition, Tizzy Lockman, who's the co-chair of the Reading Consortium, has moved up to a leadership role in the Senate Democratic Caucus. Representative Kim Williams, who's another consortium member and an education reform advocate, has been given a seat on the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee. So we've got a few strong players in the education reform arena who are now playing larger roles in the legislative process. And that could make a difference. But, you know, hey, it's early January, and we've got 5.5 months to go where anything can happen before the legislative session ends.
So the Reading Group was also looking at other issues beyond what we see in these recommendations. What's still left on the table for the group to work on?
Well, you know, there are a lot of items on the consortium's plate, and all we've talked about so far today are the top priorities that have a price tag attached to them, items that have to be brought to the attention of the governor and the General Assembly now so that they can be incorporated into the budget discussions. You know, but there are at least two items that the General Assembly will be hearing more about in the next couple of months. The first is a revised version of a bill that was pushed a couple of years ago by former Representative Earl Jakes that would give school boards a limited authority to raise property taxes without going to a referendum. Now, some school board members and some school districts like this idea, but the Delaware School Boards Association does not. So we can expect some more discussion about that this spring. The other significant item is how to restructure the school districts in northern Newcastle County so that there are fewer boards with roles within the city of Wilmington. You know, and that's a remnant of the desegregation court order from the 1970s. The consortium was supposed to, under its enabling legislation, prepare a proposal for the State Board of Education to consider by the 1st of April of this year. But the COVID-19 pandemic became the top priority last year for the school administrators and board members who were primarily assigned to work on this project. So as a result, the consortium members who serve in the General Assembly are going to have to introduce legislation in the next month or so to extend that deadline. That's likely to mean that it's going to be another year before we hear great detail about how the districts that serve the greater Wilmington area might possibly be realigned.
So I want to go back and finish by looking at what State Senator Lochman and Matt Dent said in their introduction to this report. It expressed frustration that these issues remain unresolved after multiple attempts to address them. Do you sense that this frustration is more acute now, that those involved in the Reading Consortium are less likely to take no for an answer or wait for an answer, especially as the pandemic has kind of thrown some of these inequities into starker relief?
I think the answer to your question is yes. The members of the consortium are less likely to take no for an answer this time around. But as we all know, the pandemic has changed a lot of things. Many people are still working from home. Government agencies are having meetings via Zoom instead of in person. Students are learning remotely, and they're going back into that hybrid mode next week. So the pandemic has thrown all of these inequities that impact low-income and minority students into much sharper relief. And it has also complicated the efforts to come up with solutions. So the bottom line here, there's ample evidence today that the urgency to create solutions is greater than ever. And to me, that suggests that real solutions are more likely to appear now than would have been the case a year or two ago. However, because of the pandemic, it may want up taking a little bit longer than we had anticipated to be able to actually put these solutions into place.
Larry Nightingale, as always, we appreciate your time and reporting, and we expect that you will keep an eye on this as it continues to move forward for us. Thank you.
Okay, you're quite welcome, Tom.